Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live over on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Maybe you're listening to this later on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your fine podcasts. It's all good. We love having you here. And we love the guests that we are going to have on tonight as well. We'll bring them in a second. But before we do, why don't we get to a comment? A comment from one of you, the listeners. Why don't we kick it off with that?
So, all right.
We've been asking folks to leave a comment, leave a rating, 5 stars, if you will, as well as a suggestion of a book
only
for us to review.
Believe it. You know, we don't want you to lie for us.
You know, we don't want you to lie. But yeah. I'll tell you what, if you leave us a 1-star rating and you're like, hey, can you review this book? I don't think we're going to do it.
Well, it's nice to just be honest with people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's not mislead.
You be honest, we'll be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how this works.
It's a better way to live.
Yes, but we have been getting one of the great things about the comments is people have been leaving recommendations of books, either new books we might have missed or older books we might not have reviewed. And we've been hitting them on our Stack podcast. So I'm going to read this comment here. This is from Chris Espinette. Not
wow,
Chris
okay.
Espinette. Recently started listening to the show during work, and I've been hooked since day one. The banter is hilarious, and that doesn't stop the host from offering a lot of insight into a wide variety of books, which have even made me change my outlook on some books that I haven't liked in the past. That's huge.
Wow, that's
crazy. I'm not sure if this book has been reviewed before, but I would love to hear your opinions on Silver Surfer Requiem by JMS. I knew very little about Silver Surfer prior to reading this, but the art and the writing were fantastic and really resonated with me and made me fall in love with the character in just 4 issues.
Yeah.
Chris, great recommendation. You've got it. We're going to talk about
that. Chris.
The Stack
Podcast. As I like to call you.
Good old, I like a nice crisp Espinette, you know?
You know what
just
I mean?
Just like it goes down smooth.
There's Espinettes and then there's crisp Espinettes, you know what I mean?
Delicioso. So we're going to talk about that on the Stack Podcast that drops in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. Wednesdays at 9 a.m., so check that out along with our regular reviews. And folks, why don't we bring in our first guest here this evening into the stream. He is the writer of The Ward from Dark Horse Comics. The first issue is already out, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Scott, hello.
Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Oh my gosh. So if people can't tell from your accent, you're actually over in the UK, popping on past midnight at this point. So thank you for coming on.
Tonight. I know. I'll be turning into a pumpkin in a minute.
but I am very excited to chat about The Ward. We talked about this on our Stack podcast, really enjoyed the book a lot. And one of the things that I think is so great about it, which we were talking about during the review, is it's such a smart, clear pitch of an idea that you can't believe somebody hasn't done it before. Where did this idea come from? Was what one of those things that kind of like popped to you of the pitch line and then you figured it out after that, or where did it start?
I think it came from, my wife loves ER, I mean, loves the R. I think loves the R a bit more than she loves me. And then from that has evolved into various other shows. And one of those was Code Black. And I don't know if anyone watched Code Black. Mm-hmm. It only lasts a few series. Mm-hmm. But it was one that brought me in as well. I sort of was dragged in. I used to watch them with her. And I mean, it's those kind of procedural shows when you don't have to watch them all. You know, you could just dip in and watch the odd episode. But with Code Black, I watched every single one, and then I realized it was based on a documentary about a real hospital that dealt with emergency rooms in that way, of actually doing the surgery and everything actually in the emergency room with no booths or anything, just there. The documentary is phenomenal, and I suggest anyone who likes The Ward, and also anyone who likes medical dramas, to go and find it. It's amazing. But then, my head being what it was, I loved it, and then thought, well, this will probably be better with monsters. And because I think everything would be better with monsters, to be honest. Wow. And that was it. That was the beginning of The Ward. And so I started putting together, I mean, it had a quite a long gestation period. Talked to a couple of publishers, talked to a couple of editors, and Dark Horse became our home, and it went from there.
Well, it's a great home. What's really nice is there's no wasted panels with this idea of monsters, right? There's all these really cool, unique characters that really make you, as a comic fan, want to kind of really look at all the details, because a lot of times in comics you got kind of wasted background characters, but with this, not the case. You want to kind of see everybody's job and what kind of monster does what, and it's such a kind of, it brings a fresh take on something we've seen a bunch. I was just wondering, how were you very specific, or did you let the kind of artist go crazy with that?
It's a bit of both. I mean, Andre is amazing and
great. Yeah,
I'm a real folklore geek, every time I go on holiday, I buy books of like local myths, legends, ghost stories, and creatures and monsters. And so I've sort of got this catalogue, which I now can say is research. I've been saying it's research for pretty much the last 40 odd years. But you know, and I do put lots of suggestions in. But the great thing about Andre, he's just taken with it and run with it. And one of the things I said right at the beginning, now the other thing I'm probably known best for these days in comics and books is working on Star Wars. And what I love about Star Wars is the backgrounds, you know, the fact you get all those characters that you know will end up in a visual dictionary, and you will know will end up in a short story somewhere, and before you know it, there's a movie or spin-off series on Disney Plus. And I said, with The Ward, we want a similar thing. We want there to be all these characters in the background, so it feels like a busy, vibrant place of work for supernatural patients and doctors, but you want to know about their stories as well. And so obviously the main thrust of the book is dealing with our just like something like ER or Code Black or Grey's, dealing with the team of doctors who have to deal with these amazing, amazing problems every day. So we tell their story, but there's always these creatures in the background. And it was just fun to try and think of, you have a medical situation in the real world, what would be the most extreme version in the supernatural world? And actually we find that out in issue 2, part of it, because my first pitch was, well, imagine these doctors in a sewer having to help a giant give birth, and that's what we see in issue 2.
Awesome. Well, given that you are fleshing out the world so exponentially, it seems to be a point you're really excited about. At the same time, you do have it very focused on this one main character, so how do you strike the balance there between those two things?
Well, you have to. I mean, story, you know, it's a cliche because it works. Stories are characters. And if it wasn't for a character that you want to go along with, this kind of comic, well, any kind of comic would never work. You know, you can have as much cool shit as you want, but you need to care about the people to take you through to the next issue. And hopefully that's got what we've got with Nat, who's our protagonist, our lead character. She used to be a doctor at this hospital at St. Lilith's, but for some reason that we'll find out maybe in a future issue, she left and had a traumatic experience there and left and sort of started a new life. But that old life isn't quite ready to let her go, and she gets dragged back into the hospital to help someone. And through Nat, again, we meet all these other characters, people that she knew in the past, her friends when she was there. There's a nurse who can literally split herself to stretch herself incredibly thin because they have no staff. So the one of the nurses has to literally duplicate herself to get round to everyone. You get the doctor, who's a Japanese phantom, faceless Japanese phantom, who obviously has some issues with Nat walking back in. And then you get new characters who are like the new young firebrands of the hospital, who are going, who's this woman? And so these are the people that hopefully are going to get people to come back month after month, and hopefully beyond this run, if we can make a hit of this. Because, you know, they are real people. And even though some of them have amazing powers, that's what I think will keep people coming back in a book like this, because no matter how, you know, amazing the magic is, you have to care about the people who are casting it, or in this case, curing it.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, it does such a great job for a first issue of getting excited to get more into this world. And I was really just kind of like enjoying, before the interview, rereading it to just kind of like be like, oh my God, like, what is that guy's deal? And I wonder, like of those kind of monsters and stuff, what are some kind of your favorite stories that kind of got you into this world and got you kind of excited about this stuff?
Well, I think it's really difficult to say without obviously giving massive spoilers.
Yeah, please don't. We don't want to get you in trouble here.
I actually want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, you want me to go. Thanks for that. Sorry. That's good. Good to know. It's late and I might slip up. And this isn't like Star Wars or working for DC, because the only person who's going to get annoyed is me. So there you go. But I'm still not going to tell you. It's an urban fantasy book at its heart. And so it's taking those tropes that you see in different things and working out, you know, how that would work for these creatures. So one of the characters, again, that was in my original pitch was, you know, it was some kind of line about the doctors have to deal with a dehorned Minotaur. And so you start getting in, well, that's cool, but why have they lost their horn? You know, and so in our story, the Minotaur is part of a gang who's in a fight with another gang, or maybe someone else, gets his horn ripped out at his core. And so then you start running that story, you know, and this Minotaur, we find out, actually quite likes pain. We don't want to get too deep into that, but that's part of his psyche. So being a fae, being a fairy type, he is allergic to iron, so starts piercing himself with iron and dipping his horns into iron. So he's in this constant pain and this constant fury. And that's the fun of these kind of books. Because again, what you try and do is, even though these characters are utterly, you know, supernatural and extraordinary, you want to give them really relatable feelings. And obviously, you know, try and work out why that Minotaur would perhaps be like that. And so it is trying to find the way. And what I've really enjoyed with this book is finding the most outlandish characters and combining them with something that we would see every day if we were watching ER, you know. So, and then trying to inject the supernatural and the extraordinary back into that situation. And we worked really hard. And I worked with a friend of mine, Daniel Jose Alda, who I worked with in Star Wars High Republic, who used to be a paramedic. So he was amazing because I used to go to him and say, right, in this situation, if you were dealing with a banshee, what would you do? And it's the kind of conversation that Daniel loves to have. And also our editor, Dave Marshall at Dark Horse, his wife is a doctor. So I had research there on tap. It was amazing. So there'd be situations we were going through. Again, we're dealing with like the birth of a giant baby that then has to be taken into hospital in a city where no one knows that these creatures really exist. You're obviously dealing with that situation, but at the same time, I had to, Daniel and our wonderful editor's wife continually sort of going, but when you're dealing with resuscitating a baby, no matter how big they are, you have to do this. And so that's why, you know, that was the fun of this, is trying to ground it in the real world, but also make it believable as a fantasy.
Awesome. I mean, beyond all of that, though, not to get too technical about it, but you have all these elements that you're mentioning, and then at the same time, you're also doing a first issue. So you have this done-in-one mystery, you're setting up the world, all of these things. Mm-hmm. Plus, you need to set up an ongoing series and hook people at the same time, which you do without, again, spoiling it. You know, there is a little bit of a twist there at the end that seems to propel several stories potentially going forward. How do you balance all of those elements in a first issue like that? Does it just come down to gut feeling, or is there something more technical than that?
I mean, there is a lot. So actually, when I pitched this as an ongoing originally. And so, you know, and it was at a point. I mean, to be honest, this is amazing, this book's with us, because, it, you know, I pitched it as an ongoing. And then he said, well, we can give you 4 issues to start with and we'll see how it goes. But fair enough. Then the world ended for 2 years. And so we had started to work on it. And then basically it was complete pencils down. It was like we had no idea if this was going to happen. We didn't know if comics as we, you know, knew them would exist. And yeah, Dark Horse quite rightly said, look, this is a creator-owned launch. We don't know what it's going to do. We should probably pause and see where the world lands. and at one point it was going to become just a graphic novel and sort of pull it all together. And then Dark Horse, bless them, right at the end said, come on, let's do it as we always meant to. But originally I think some of these storylines I did plan to run as an ongoing. So I did have to, while I didn't cram in, you know, 3 years of stories in my head into 4 issues, I did have to go, right, we're going to have to take the most important bits. Because as you say, you have to try and hook people straight away. There's no point saving stuff.
If no one's going to be there. Yeah,
exactly. Even if you're doing an ongoing, you don't want to do that. You have the benefit of more issues, but at the same time, you still have to get people to read them. And these are, you know, they're dense issues because we have to get a lot in there, and we have an artist in Andre who can completely handle it, which is a joy. But the flip side of that, the great side of that, is that there's a lot of content for people to read as well. These aren't quick reads because there's a lot going on. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it now does come down to gut feeling, which is, you know, it sounds a bit of a cop-out, but I've been doing this for 20 years in various different medium. And so after a while, you do just sort of get an idea of, no, that's where the cliffhanger comes. And actually, cliffhangers are incredibly important to me personally. I'm a storyteller. As anyone will know, I talk for more than half an hour. I mentioned Doctor Who. So here it comes. I was brought up on Doctor Who in the UK, and that was when Doctor Who was the 25-minute show on Saturday afternoon. And always it ended on a major cliffhanger, you know, to get you to come back the next week and see how the Doctor would survive. Spoiler, he would. See how the Daleks would fail. Spoiler, they would. But you kept coming back. And sometimes the episodes were complete crap, but the cliffhanger was always amazing. So right from early on, cliffhangers were sort of bred into me because of my love of that show. And so now I work pretty much from the cliffhanger. So whenever I'm planning anything, and whether that's a novel, a screenplay, because screenplays have mini cliffhangers throughout, I do those cliffhangers first. So when I looked at The Ward, I knew where the cliffhangers for the ongoing story needed to come. And I knew what those tent poles were and where they needed to fall. And then I sort of, I could work out how many, you know, how much space I have to tell the, as you say, the story, you know, the one and done story of the week, because I did want it to feel like one of those, you know, medical dramas where you have people coming in, you have, you know, a bit like House as well. You have a mystery to solve. And then you stay with the characters into the next issue. Now, some of our cases might go on more than one issue as the series goes on. But, you know, it is that sense you can pick up an issue. And I like that about comics still, when you can get a comic, when you can pick up an issue and go, I'm going to read this and not necessarily knew what came before. Because I think that's how all of us of a certain age got into comics in the first place. You just picked up an issue of Spider-Man. You hadn't necessarily picked up the one before, but you picked up that one. And so it was quite interesting to, I don't think I've really had a challenge, you know, like this, to actually tell an ongoing story, but in a sort of sequential one and done format. It all came from those cliffhangers. They were the focal point.
That's cool. Great. I'm so impressed, really, because I also really love those done-in-one stories. And the fact that you had this big outline for so many years and managed to condense it, but it still kept that sense, particularly for the first issue. I haven't read the second issue yet. But That's great. I'm very impressed. Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, I haven't literally squeezed 3 years. this arc ends, you know, where it probably sort of would have ended after a few more issues if it was an ongoing. But yeah, there's definitely a plan for, you know, if we do get more issues and we do take this story forward. And I get the feeling that even if it doesn't end this form, we will try and continue it in other ways. Yeah, we know where it's going. So this is definitely the first step on the way.
I did want to ask you before we, not to move on to something else, but since you mentioned the Star Wars work, I've been reading a bunch of the High Republic stuff, which is awesome. Now that you are heading into the second phase of it, what has the coordination been like behind the scenes? How has that developed? How has that changed? How has that grown between you and the other team members?
Well, the biggest change, so for people who don't know, the High Republic is this big 5-year project that I've been involved in from the off. It was five of us put together the original idea, put together the original plan, planned the 5 years of storytelling, including three phases. The first phase was just the five of us. So Claudia Gray, Daniel Jose Older, Justine Ireland, Charles Soule, and myself. The second phase, we brought in new writers as well. So that has changed things. They're actually writers that majority of us have known or worked together with in different ways, so we already have that there. But the organization is very much pretty much what it's always been. So we have regular meetings, it's a writer's room. That's exactly what it is, you know. What the new guys have had from us is the overarching story arc. And we've definitely not said to them, you are writing, these are the events you are writing. But again, just like I was saying with the cliffhangers, the way we did the High Republic as a whole was we had these sort of fixed points in time in the story that couldn't change, but how we got there could sort of meander a bit, or, you know, and it can meander's not the right word, you can tell it's late, but evolve, you know, and develop, because it was supposed to be a living story. So we always knew some of the characters would change as we were writing them, because that's what happens with characters. And we didn't want it to be so set in stone that we would then find ourselves in a situation where plot was happening to the characters. We wanted the characters to affect the plot. So there were these key elements that we knew we'd have to do, but we didn't actually know exactly how we would get there until we were writing it. So it was a great combination of discovery writing and actual and outlining, because you had to outline it because there were so many books and there's so many of us. And,
yeah.
You know. So, but yeah, generally the communication is the same. When we had a Slack group for the original five in the first group, we have a Slack group for this one. We also have a little mini group in that, which is the five of us still, you know, acting as Lucasfilm call us the story architects. It just means that we just make stuff up. So, you know, the five of us are supposed to be over the top, you know, over the entire story. So we have our own little group as well. But yeah, I mean, again, we're all pretty much talking, if not every day, every other day. You know, there's a lot of communication. And then obviously on top of that, you get the artists and you get everyone else involved. And the High Republic has grown as well since we started it, because now there are other elements of the High Republic as well. So, you know, we're having to keep an eye on that. Some of them we're involved in, some of them we're not. Sometimes the things that are not, you go, thank heavens for that, because I don't have to worry about that story that's over there. But yeah, that's how it's working at the minute.
I mean, that's one of the things that I really actually love about the High of the Republic and the way that it's laid out, because for those who don't know, though I imagine many people watching or listening to the show do, is that, like you were saying, it's books, it's comics, it's graphic novels, it's all ages comic books, it's all over the place. So, you know, particularly as a lot of people look at the live action stuff, and some people really like it, some of it, some people don't like some of it, but they all say, oh man, it's stuck in the same era, it's always doing the same characters. You guys, you got Yoda, but other than that, like, it's this whole fresh new world, it's this whole fresh new look at the Star Wars universe, which I imagine is very exciting to deal with, but also scary to deal with in a certain way as well.
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying. And what we've done to ourselves is, so the way it's worked, we've had this first phase, which has introduced a lot of Jedi and a lot of characters, and has also exited quite a lot of those Jedi as well in the last few months. But we've sort of got to a cliffhanger on that. And what we've done, instead of moving on a bit, we've decided to go back, and we're telling a story that isn't, it's not a prequel. It's very much part of the story, mm-hmm. but we are nipping. We're doing a very George Lucas thing. We've told a story. Now we're going back, and then we'll go forward again. And so what we've done is we realized this. We spent many years creating these characters, introducing these characters, getting people to love these characters. And then we said, well, hold on to those, and we're going to do it all over again. So we've just given ourselves exactly the same amount of work. So that in itself is scary, because again, we don't know how people are going to react. I mean, we were at Celebration, Star Celebration, and it was incredible and it was amazing. And 4,000 people turned up to a books and comics panel. I mean, it's just bonkers.
Nice.
And there was a moment there when we realized, oh God, this really does mean put stuff to people, you know, this is important to people. And so now you go, are they going to come with us? Are they going to, you know, mm-hmm. come back 150 years previously in the story? And as I said, it's not really a prequel. There are definite links, but it's still, we're saying here are a load of new characters. And the moment I think we all realized it was okay, the logo went up for phase two and the logo was blue instead of gold. And that got a massive ooh. And we thought, okay, we're probably all right here. And then every bit of concept art, because again, that's been the amazing thing about the project. Disney have just thrown concept art of it, which for comics we're used to designs. For books, you don't get all this. And so every bit of art we were showing, it was getting a response there in the room. And the characters from my Marvel comic, the two characters we showed, Vildar and Matty, two Jedi and a Padawan, about an hour later, there was fan art on Twitter.
Wow.
I was like, this is insane. This is insane. And it is amazing. And that's what I've loved most about it, is that people have become so creative through it. I mean, that's, you know, I'm a fan because I'm a writer because I'm a fan. You know, I have got into writing by writing fan fiction and fan comics, you know, back before they were called fan fiction and fan comics. You know, it was just sort of just stories about stuff. And I used to send them off to sort of like photocopied fanzines and things like that. And that's the community I've always loved, because I've always loved those moments when people love something and they want to draw, they want to write, they want to make their own, you know, make their own videos and films. And again, we've got all the stuff to do it now in our hands, in our phones. And that's what we're seeing with High Republic, is that people are loving these characters, but more importantly, they're creating around these characters. And I love that. That's exactly why we want to do this.
Well, speaking of the fan in you, you have an impressive nerd wall behind you there. Is there any things you wanted to kind of point out to us or show off? I mean, it's looks pretty awesome back there.
Pete is always very interested in the walls behind people.
No, I can understand. So yeah. From a comic point of view, the Silver Centurion, who's my Iron Man still to this day.
Nice! Wow! So,
I just knocked off his pulses. There you go. I'm an 80s kid with when it comes to comics. I was introduced by Marvel UK, really, to superheroes. And the one that blew my mind was Secret Wars. And we had Secret Wars Weekly over here, which they reprinted Secret Wars. And it would be, you know, the first 10, because it was literally weekly, it would be like 7 pages of Secret Wars. Then it was Alpha Flight. For there's an entire generation of fans over here who knew Alpha Flight long before they knew the Avengers.
Wow.
And it blew my mind that all these characters knew each other, because I was only really sort of like, we had Marvel UK, which was great, but you know, it was only what they published you could really get hold of. It's before comic shops had really taken hold over here. Then they went into Secret Wars 2, and they were so clever. So they would basically print the issue of Secret Wars 2, and then they would print all the tie-in stories. But what they'd have to do is go back a few issues and print, you know, what had happened. So so you'd suddenly get 3 weeks of three weeks of Power Pack, and then you get, you know, 3 weeks of the New Mutants, and the Silver Centurion Iron Man, which of course was part of Silver of Secret Wars 2, for some reason just took my interest, and I went ahead, and that's why I went into comic stores to try and find out more about Iron Man. So that's why he's there, because it's always to remind me that side.
Nice, love that.
My Captain Riker. Oh no, you can't see him now. My Commander Riker. This is my 2020 figure.
That's great. Wow.
I thought that just summed up 2020 to me. So
for anybody who's listening,
he's there. What else have we got? Oh, we got this fella. So another action figure. Sorry, you've got me now. I can be talking about this for hours. So, Star Wars, again, Marvel, were my intro into so many different things, Marvel UK and the weekly comics. I don't know how I managed to spend so much money on them. I must have just, you know, sold drugs or something as a 10-year-old. I didn't, that's a lie. Anyway, I think we all swapped them at school as well, but, you know, Star Wars Weekly was the other big one for us. And that's before I saw a Star Wars film, I read the Marvel comics because, oh, you know, wow. So there was one character I met before I met Luke Skywalker, and that was Jackson, the green space bunny. So there he is. Now, Jackson was a character in the Marvel run briefly until George Lucas went, no. And he's a smuggler who's not very good. He's a rival of Han Solo. He has a ship called the Rabbit's Foot. And when I was a kid, I honestly thought he was one of the most important Star Wars characters ever because I didn't know any better. So when I saw Empire Strikes Back and he wasn't in it, I was so upset.
Oh, no.
So fast forward to 2016 and I get my chance to write Star Wars for the first time. And the first thing I say to them after that first attempt is, can I do Jackson now? And every time I talked to them, it was like, can I do Jackson now? And to shut me up, they gave me a chance in Star Wars Adventures to write an 8-page Jackson short backup strip. And they went, that's your lot. It'll be fun. It's coming out Easter. They put the news story out on April the 1st, and everyone thought it was a joke. It was like, no, we really are bringing him back. The greatest thing happened is that kids read that comic and absolutely loved him. So now I think I've done for the last, well, since 2018, I think it was, I've done an annual Jackson event. So I've done annuals. Right. He's been in my Vader's Castle Halloween series. I managed to write a short story in one of the certain point of view books, which was the Empire Strikes Back one. So I got to write him into Empire Strikes Back. So just before, when Vader arrives for dinner in Empire Strikes Back, Jackson's there asking Lando for money.
Amazing.
And then they produced an action figure, and I was like, you are kidding me. This is just insane. So he's always up there as well. So yeah, there is so much. And everything up here, there is a reason for it all there. It's not just random geek.
I'm glad that you know, they're there as reminders and they help you out. That's awesome.
Okay. Do you know what? And the thing about this fella is that he reminds me that it's fun. You know, it's got to be, because there are times when you work in this business and it's not always fun. But what you can't see is around here is I have bits of art and everything. And there is, again, there are far too many Ewoks for a man who's been in 12 years war. But again, it's that thing to remind me of the excitement I felt when I was 10. And I saw the Ewoks, you know, and it's like, yeah, we can have stories can break your heart, and they can, you know, and they can terrify you. But at the end of the day, they're also sometimes just funny, and they just make you go, that was really cool. And so that, you know, I've got lots of things around me to remind myself that, A, it's great that my to-do list is the same as when I was 10.
That's amazing.
And to be trying to get that into some of my work, because I think that's what shows, you know, when you love something, and that's what people will get out of it at the other end. And so, yeah, all this stuff around me in my man cave is definitely to remind me why I do this job. And also it's tax deductible, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's the important part. Yeah. I know you're going to have to get to bed soon, but we have a couple of hopefully quick questions over on YouTube. Yep. I wanted to hit you with. This is from Infinity. I'm definitely pronouncing that wrong. Let's say Infinity Comics. Not sure who wrote The High Republic, but here's a question for that person. That would be Kevin. Who on earth thought it was a good idea to create a literal rock as a character? I'm genuinely curious.
So that was Claudia Gray. So Geode, if you don't know, has become a sensation. We didn't know if we were going to get one Geode cosplayer celebration. We had three turn up at the panel. Nice. So Geode is a sentient rock. It's Vintian, to be exact. Lots of people got very excited about Geode. A lot of people have decided they hate Geode. A lot of people think Geode's in everything and every page. I've never written Geode. But he is... I love him because he's amazing comic relief, because there is a rock that no one ever sees move, is a bit of a ladies' man, is a bit of a philosopher, navigates a ship and does all kinds of things, but does it in a way that no one in the room has noticed he's done it. And his nickname is Geode. And people have seemed to think that, you know, there's something deep and meaningful here. It's like, no, he was comic relief. That's why he started. He's taken on a life of his own. And again, it's that thing of like, Star Wars is better when it's weird. I mean, I think that's just something that everyone should remember. You know, we have this is my thing with Jackson. Why can we have a rabbit? We have a fish in charge of an entire fleet.
That's right. It's a trap.
Who we all love. It's a trap, yeah. You know. In the Ewoks cartoon, and people might not like to mention this, there is a mountain that cries. And I think that's brilliant, you know, because again, all these universes can be big enough for there to be nonsense and whimsy and things like that. And Geode, I think, is the greatest example of that, because there was a guy with a Geode tattoo on his arm. I mean, seriously? A celebration. That's amazing. But it's amazing. And you know what? He's fun. And I think sometimes people need to remember that things are fun. And that's what Geode definitely is. But also, he's a big rock. So if he lands on you, you have to be a Sith Lord to get out from underneath that.
There you go. Sure. We got another one here. This is from Fantha Tracks TV. Would Kevin like to bring back any other Marvel Weekly Star Wars characters? Crimson Jack, Lumia, The Darker, Rick Duel, etc.
Yes, all of them. Basically, Matt Martin at Story Group has worked out that I have a book of things that I'm trying to recanonize. So that includes the entire Ewok movies in various points. I'm not doing it all at once. I'm not talking about remaking Caravan of Courage, but I'm just talking about eventually will have mentioned all of the things in it somewhere else. And so, yeah, I mean, Crimson Jack is one I'd love to bring back. Valance came back already, and that really annoyed me because that's the one I really, really, really wanted to bring back. The Hoojibs I've brought back already. That was second on my list. But yeah, the Darker, I would love, because I've brought the Hoojibs back, and if there's people out there going, what are you talking about? But you know, if you bring back the Hoojibs, eventually you have to bring back the Darker. So yeah, or everything and all of it. I mean, I'd bring back all of Legends like that in a flash and find a way of doing it if I could. And they know that, and they watch out for me at all times.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that modern Star Wars stuff has been doing really well. We talk a lot about Charles Soule's Darth Vader book in particular, where he used the prequels in a great way, and like the imagery of the prequels in a great way to bring it back. And I think, like you're talking about with Jackson, you know, like you're talking about with Geode, all of these characters, they mean something to somebody, and they're going to mean something down the line as well. So it's all canon. It's all good.
And,
like you're saying,
just have fun. And the great thing about, again, this comes back to what we were talking about, the Ward earlier on, and then those background characters. There are so many characters in Star Wars. I mean, we've created a couple of trillion, it seems, in the High Republic, but already there were, you know, it's a very big galaxy with a lot of people. And what I always think, and I know people don't always want to hear this, is just because you don't like that bit of Star Wars, that's all right. You don't have to. You haven't got to like everything. So I'm fully believe that Star Wars is for everyone, as the catchphrase goes, but not every part of Star Wars is for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's elements of Star Wars that I don't like. There's elements of Star Wars I love far too much. But the universe is big enough for all of us to like what we like. And, you know, and this goes, it's not just Star Wars. People talk about Star Wars fandom, and trust me, someone who's written for various different fandoms, it's the same everywhere. And usually it's exactly the same answer. Like what you like. If you don't like that, fair enough. Move on. You can love something else because someone else is going to adore that. Trust me. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, yeah, but that's why I love Star Wars, because it is big enough for everyone to find something that they love. And all of those stories still exist, you know, in various different forms. And so you can go and find those and relive them as many times as you want.
Yeah. Or there are other alternate fantasy worlds out there, like The Ward, that people should check out.
And, exactly.
Which is also great.
Nicely and done. I like that. Yeah,
thank you very much. Yeah. Always good when you do a transition that you talk about the transition, I think. So sit in this moment. But the first issue is out. The second issue is coming out July 8th, I want to say, something like that. Is that correct?
Yep.
Awesome. It's so good. Can't wait. Kevin, we're not going to keep you up any longer. Thank you so much for doing the show so late.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, guys. Night. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man.
All right. Once again, that's Kevin Scott. The book is called The Ward from Dark
Horse. Oh, you got to check it out. Definitely check it out. So great.
And I'm going to bring a special dude into the stream now who has a little message for Pete LePage. Take it away.
Hey, Pete, just wanted to say, sucking on a cheesesteak. $200 for the Justin Tyler cameo. What's up, guys?
Hey, Justin, how are you? How was our interview? Did we do it okay without you?
It was great. It was great to really watch you guys work thanks, from Justin. A standpoint as an insider outsider, really.
Well, now that you've seen our interview technique, we can check out your interview technique with our next guest here. That
you guys are taking a break on this one?
Yeah, we're just going to sit back and
just hang back.
We're going to bring out our next guest here. His name is Kyler Merrill, and he has a book called Fletcher Cross. It was on Kickstarter right now.
Hey, hey, what's Kyler, up?
Hello.
How you doing?
Wait, good, who said? Good. Oh, you were a little delayed. Yes. Uh-oh. Hello. There you go. No, that's fine. Okay. You're doing great. Okay. Kyler, thank you so much for coming and doing this. Thanks for talking about the book. Now, you have a bunch of days left to go on your Kickstarter. I'm actually going to refresh this here. You got a $2,500 goal. And as of this telling, taking too long to load up, it's about 1,700 of the way there. So you're getting pretty close with 6 days to go. But talk to us about Fletcher Cross. Why bring this back? What called to you about this property in particular?
Well, I guess I'll start with kind of the origin of the book. And it started in 2020. I did an anthology called Pandemics and Panels. And it was back when I thought COVID was going to last like 2 months. And I was like, oh, look, I'll make an anthology. Other people have done it. And I made one, and it's great. We donated the proceeds. We only made like a couple hundred bucks, but donated it all to save the children. And so I was like, I want to do another one. And so I knew I wanted to do something kind of homage-y to the golden age of comics, kind of like before in your last interview, you were talking about one-and-done comics. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. But I wanted it to be an anthology that also was a complete story while simultaneously being one-and-done. And so I messaged my friend Derek Crow. I said, hey, do you want to do this? He said, yeah, because I knew I couldn't handle doing it on my own. And so he came in. We talked about it. We decided we wanted to do this story that is it's called Fletcher Cross. He's a self-centered engineer working at Day Industries, and he decides to test the dimensionalizer before it's officially approved. And the machine goes haywire.
You know, you feel the pressure to do that.
I know. You really get it. Yeah, if you watch, and you can find the whole first chapter and figure out how all that happens. But he's kind of a dick, I'll just be honest. But he tests the machine, and it goes wrong, goes haywire, and sends him through the multiverse. He finds pirates, toddlers, Nazis, lizard people, detectives, all this stuff. We did it in 2020. It took us probably 8 months to make the whole book. We did the Kickstarter last August, weren't successful, but the book was done, and we knew we had something that we think is good. And so we think is something that is expanding the anthology format and doing something new with it. And so we just knew we wanted to bring it back. And so, we have about a week left. We end a week from today. That's Tuesday. And then we're at 65%, so we're within sight, but it's definitely going to take a lot of push from here for the next, you know, 6 days. So,
it's really a great idea and looks like a lot of fun. So I hope we give you a little bit of boost and you can make that goal, because it would be great.
Oh, he's going to get that comic book club boost. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good.
The CBCB. The patented that. This book reminds me, I don't know if this is an odd comparison, but a classic book called Zot. You've ever heard of that or read that? Is it Scott McDonald? Is that his name?
Isn't it Scott McCloud who did
Scott McCloud? Scott McCloud. Scott McCloud. It reminded me of that book, and he's written Understanding Comics, which is like a great sort of breakdown of the build out of comics. So I feel like that's good company to be in from my mind.
I mean, definitely. I'll take any opportunity to be in company with Scott McCloud. So
you mentioned this earlier, but one of the things that I really enjoyed about this book is how you vary up the page lengths and the story lengths. How did you pace that exactly? How did you find the time to do like, all right, we're just going to do a one pager here versus this is going to be a five pager, however long they're running?
Well, when we first reached out to writers, we didn't do open submissions. We were very closed about it. We only brought in people we could count on and we knew we could depend on. And so We told them was between 4 and 10 pages, and mm-hmm. one of them needed a little bit more, so we gave her 12, which no big deal. But we just said any space you want to do in there. Most of them took that full 10, but like I wrote one that's 6 pages and one that's 10, but then or one's 8. But you mentioned there's some one pagers, and those kind of started last year as they were kind of originally promotional. Mm-hmm. We were posting each one pager as like a this is a Fletcher Cross story told in one page, but we also knew we were going to throw them into the comic. We've had a couple more that the script was done for, but when the first one came around, we didn't have the art done for it. But now we've got them all in there. And so those were just in there as kind of, and there's some two pages as well, but those are also in there just to, you know, tie everything together and make sure there is a narrative all throughout. Because we put the book all together, and then we realized that, oh, there's kind of some blanks. And so we added these scenes in the middle to, you know, kind of make sure there was more of a semblance of a narrative.
I gotta be honest. I mean, I like a lot of the stuff in the book, but I almost the one pagers are some of my favorite stuff. And part of the reason is because I feel like all of this multiverse stuff, and by definition, it's going into these different places. You find, oop, here's a thing that's horribly wrong that makes this a terrible place to go, and then you leave. Or like in a what if story in Marvel, same sort of thing. How horribly wrong could this scenario go? But the one pagers, I love the idea of going to the multiverse and just hanging for a second, you know, be like, yeah, oh, this is a nice universe, and going there. I thought that was very cool.
I appreciate that. I'm not good at doing one page comics, but I haven't been in the past. But for this, it kind of just clicked. Like the one that I'm the most proud of is I'm proud of two. I'm proud of the Under the Sea one, which is kind of what you're talking about with kind of just being what if, and it's literally just a one pager. It's completely silent, and he just lands underwater, and he has to get back to the thing before he's eaten by a shark. And so I like that one, but I also really like the one. It's called Don't Fuck with Nazis, or Fuck Nazis is what it's called. And not don't fuck, that's better, do fuck with Nazis. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I want to scratch that whole thing. It's called Fuck Nazis. And it ends, I'm proud of it because it literally ends with a punchline, and because he gets back to where he decks him in the face, and it's a punchline to the joke. Yeah, I think I'm proud of it. It's not like the best thing, but I'm proud of it. So, but yeah, they were definitely fun opportunities to kind of just tell random little things that I didn't have a full, me and Derek didn't have a full concept for, but we knew that there was something interesting to tell there.
We'll talk a little bit about the Kickstarter. So if people pledge, they'll get the book, of course. What else can potentially people look forward to?
We have a few other rewards. We have three prints. We have one from one of the artists. They're all from different artists in the book. We have one from Sonia Kinsey. It's her story is called Hollow World. It has to do with lizard people and dinosaurs in the Hollow Earth. And so there's a print from that story. There's a print of the cover, which is actually a wraparound cover, which I think is really interesting. I haven't been promoting that part enough, but yeah, it's a really cool wraparound cover that I designed. And then we had one of the artists, Veronica Jones. She did the artwork for that. But the other one is from Jack Van Tom. He is another artist in the book, and it's a square. I just really like how it is. Looks like it's on newsprint. It's really interesting. But then other than that, we have a retailer package, which is, you know, we're basically selling copies of the book at a retailer discount. And we have some ad space on my podcast, Comics Unscripted. We have some editing services from myself and Derek Crow, who edited and curated the anthology. And he's also has several other books to his name. And then we have one more that is already taken. So I guess it doesn't matter. I can't remember.
Can't get it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Kyler, this is great. So again, you got 6 days if you want to pledge it. It's a great book and a really big package. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah. Have a great night and good luck. My fingers are crossed for you.
Yeah, it's a really great concept. Congrats, man. All right.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Once again, it was Kyler Merrill. The book is called Fletcher Cross. It's a 120-page comic anthology on Kickstarter now.
And also, what's great is one of the options you get, like, you can get editing. So if you have a comic, you know, you want to help this comic out because then they could help you make your comic. I mean, that's
you don't have to
cool.
do things just because you're going to get something out of it, Pete. Just, like, do it out of the goodness of your own heart.
Well, you know? There's that. But if you've had a dream to work on comics, this guy could help you edit your comic. I mean, that's
what
nice.
I do on a daily basis is I just go around to Kickstarters and I give them thousands of bucks each. And I'm like, give me nothing. Don't even worry about it.
Wow.
Yeah, just that's your job at your day job, Alex, is mostly for what? Swag, off brand flavors of Oreo. What are some other forms of payment that you take?
Those are the only two forms. Wow. Actually, you know what I actually also accept, this is interesting, is your audience question. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question and ask a question here on Crowncast or in the comments over on YouTube. But before we get to that, what you guys drinking? Pete, what are you drinking over there? You having some sort of kombucha?
I have no idea what Health this kick. Is.
Old salad dressing.
It's something.
Rosé de hibiscus. Oh, my goodness.
Is that alcohol or is that a perfume bottle you found on the street?
What sucks is, like, I went into a beer store, and it's so fancy, I can't tell what. I just went to the guy, was like, I want a beer. And he was like, I can't help you. There's, like, all these fancy beers now, and everything's, like, hops and IPA. I need something that's got alcohol in it. And he was like, they all do. And it's a nightmare. I can't.
So in an entire beer store, which mind you probably had like Coors, right? You grabbed Rosé de Hibiscus.
Looking for the Coors Light. You can't walk up to a fucking snooty guy with a bow tie and go like, where's the Coors Light, you dickhead? Everything's $20 and you got to get an individual fucking cans. And then they give you fucking
$50 says the two employees at this beer store were like, watch if I can make this crotchety old man buy Rosé de Hibiscus. He's gonna walk out of here sipping.
Yeah, you know what it probably was? You walked in and they saw you were already eating handfuls of potpourri and you're like, this guy like
this
one.
Guy's got strong flavor.
The problem is I walked in, they asked me for help and I was just kind of like, get away from me, don't talk to me, I'm just walking into the store trying to get an assessment of stuff. And then I realized, oh, I do need help, but it was too late.
You were in full free fall at that point and needed help immediately. I'm just drinking in this country air. Just kidding. I'm drinking a Long Trail. I got some Long Trail today. Great Vermont beer. The VT IPA, and then jumping over to the Double Bag. Which
Are you in the VT? Is that where you are right now?
I'm not. I'm in upstate New York at my mom's house where we would come in the summer. It's like a cabin in the woods and
lovely. It looks just lovely out there.
But very hard to get internet is why I was late for the show. So I am currently on a hotspot at a picnic table.
I'm drinking water. Why don't we get to some questions here?
Alex, you're drinking COVID, whatever the COVID in you is barfing into your
COVID
body.
The COVID is just loving this water, I got to tell you. Edward Doherty asks, considering the public's acceptance of very odd comic lore and concepts in live action media, what traditional idea, design, or feature from comic books do you think would be too much for general audiences? A Wolverine under 6 feet, maybe?
What?
So the question is, what's something from comics that just wouldn't work in?
Yeah, would not at all work. And I think for it changes over time, I think, is part of the answer, because I don't know, we probably could have accepted it, but they certainly felt at the dawn of comic book movies, which I mean by like 2000 or so, that oh gosh, comic faithful costumes would be too much for people to handle. And then we talk about this a lot on the Marvel podcast, but even going back to the beginning of the MCU, they're like, people can't deal with magic and gods. That's going to be a step too far for them. Obviously, we're way beyond all of those things, but what is something that would not work now?
Editor's notes.
But if they have one of those in Thor, Love, and Thunder, I would not be surprised.
That's 100% true. Well, that's the thing, is like, that's the future of Easter eggs, is this stuff that you can't do. They're like, well, we can't really do it, but we can sneak in as a little bit. Showing Howard the Duck is like a dare at the end of the original Guardians. And it's not something we're following up on, but there is.
I mean, you know, in the Loki TV show, I just wanted a show where we're following around the crocodile Loki, and not much has to happen. I'll still tune in, but we're not going to get any of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's
Jolene
not
in the comments
the question, but go ahead.
Jolene in the comments.
What?
You gotta finish that non-answer.
Well, nope. I was good.
Jillian mentions retconning, which is something that I think doing like a crisis in sort of another format outside of, I guess, what they did on the CW, sort of.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is like they did Crisis on Infinite Earths and retconned a bunch of stuff and changed a bunch of stuff on the CW shows. And nothing is out of balance. I think the only thing that really isn't in balance, I'd say, is like stylistic choices that don't make any sense right now, by which I mean like 70s psychedelic stuff or things like that, you know, that wouldn't work now. Or honestly, like if you released X-Men now, the first X-Men movie, that wouldn't work in the same way. So
yeah,
you know, the, I don't know, this is not a great answer, but like things change over time. And I think this is also a side to this answer, but I think a lot about how each of the Spider-Man movie series reflect probably not just the director, but I'll call out the director, the comic books that they probably really glommed onto when they were a kid. Like Sam Raimi clearly read 60s Spider-Man, and so his series is 60s Spider-Man. And then for better or for worse, you have, what's his name? Dan Spiders, the guy who directed the Amazing Spider-Man series.
Dan Spiders?
It was John Danny Webb. Spiders.
Webb? Yeah. Whatever
his Mark Webb.
Mark Webb. Mark Webb.
Yeah. Web of?
Danny Spiders is who I mean.
Hey, anyway, Danny Spiders here. Let me
read the feature film. He clearly read 90s Spider-Man's comics in like early 2000s. And that's what he based it on. And John Watts is very like Ultimate Spider-Man, even though it's Peter Parker instead of.
I have one more answer to this John question, Watts. Which I think is reflecting what you're saying, Alex, is maybe the only thing that couldn't be translated to movies nowadays is ignoring most of the source material, like the original X-Men movies did. That's the only thing that wouldn't work for sure.
Yeah, but Justin, totally, do you still think we're going to get little wings on the side of feet? Do you think that's going to happen? You know what I mean?
Danny Spiders says we're going to get wings on everybody's feet. And that's right. I do have a yo-yo in my hand.
This is from Ben Border Collie. Late to the party here, but Master Chief finally had sex. Which fictional character do you hope loses their virginity next? To give a little bit of context here, this is back on the Halo TV show.
Alex, which, our Halo correspondent.
I'll tell you what, I love that stupid show. But of all the things they did, they went from Master Chief, the character who is fully armored all the time in the video games, and you never really see his face, to first episode took off his helmet. Second episode took off his whole armor. Third episode, I think it was the third episode, he was nude. And by the sixth episode, he was straight up having sex and lost his virginity. Clearly his virginity, because there's been no other opportunities for him to have sex or reason for him to have sex before that. Very funny, very hilarious. Had a great time watching it. What other characters, though, should lose their virginity? Oh, my God, it was ridiculous. They basically, like, sat topless next to each other because they both had never had sex with anybody before and touched each other's scars and then woke up the next morning and then she teared her nail out of her finger because there was a bug in it or whatever. It's very weird. What? It's a weird show.
That sounds like a dream you had.
Yeah, sure does. Man. That's what most of the Halo TV show felt like.
Yeah. A character, I mean, who's not doing it these days? I mean, even Krakoa is out there, you know?
Exactly. Like, I mean, Hump Island, you know, it's
Fing Fang Foom is going to do that thing, thing, boom.
Mm-hmm. What about Glob Herman? Has Glob Herman ever had sex? He feels like he has crushes on people, but he never gets to, you know, take it any further. I'd love to see him get his bone on, by which I mean the bones that are floating in his blob.
Great.
Great. Thanks for asking.
Cypher shouted out in the comments.
Oh, Cypher is married. There was a whole arc about Cypher having sex.
Did he have sex? I think he
He did. He was talking about how worn out he was, and so was she.
Wow.
He knows the languages of love. we got a question here from YouTube. This is from Nelson Martinez. One of my fave TV crossovers is when Sabrina comes to Riverdale. Which of the ladies of Riverdale do you guys expect will be the best witch in the next episode? Love the podcast, by the way. Thanks, Nelson. Nice.
Cheryl.
I mean, the easy answer is Cheryl. But I'm going to throw out with an answer that I think could easily be true. Veronica.
No, you gotta say Betty after Cheryl. Come on.
No, Veronica gets shit done, and even if it's spellcasting,
she's the She-Wolf of Wall Street. But that doesn't
real quick
mean
because Riverdale is nonsense to anybody who doesn't watch Riverdale. Though I'm about to say some nonsense at the end of the last episode of Riverdale, half of everybody in town died. And so they're going to bring in Sabrina to resurrect them, and she is going to train the surviving people, which are not coincidentally all the ladies, into being a bunch of witches. I'll throw out Tabitha. I mean, I honestly think Betty probably, but I'll throw out Tabitha. Just
really?
I'm hoping Sabrina does like a Thanos snap and brings them all back.
Did we talk about this on the podcast? I can't remember. I think Sabrina is going to help them bring us back, but it's going to lead into Afterlife with Archie next season.
You think they're going to do Afterlife with Archie in the final season?
I legitimately think they're going to do Afterlife with Archie in the final season.
I mean, does. The building blocks are there, but I think that's a wild
choice.
It would be crazy.
Yep. It definitely would put all of us to shame after all this, like, ooh, what's Endgame? Who's going to kiss? And it's like, oh, we're going to have a zombie movie, you idiots.
Jillian says it's either that or Jughead time traveling. You clearly haven't watched Riverdale because why? It's either that or.
Yeah, you can always do it more.
Absolutely. Jughead has to travel back in time to stop the zombie apocalypse. That's your plot right there.
Start it and then stop it. That's his whole thing.
Okay, we got one last one. It's been like 2 years now. How Philly is Pete? Is it water ice or Italian ice?
Wow. water
how
ice.
Philly is.
Yeah, I mean, I love the shaved ice, man. It's fucking, it's nice.
No, it's neither.
It's
shaved
nice
ice, you call it.
I'm sorry, Jolene, if I, you know, I'm, I guess I'm not as.
You're getting some all capped energy from Jolene right now. Pete, let me throw it to you and the rest of Philadelphia. Have you guys ever tried ice cream?
Oh,
just
sure.
Instead of shaved ice, because it's like way better.
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, I got a lot of love for whatever kind of different things you want to call it. I'm all in. I love a slushy. I love you know, whatever, you know, as long as there's some kind of syrup that you know, snow cone suicide style was my go-to as a kid. You know, I used to work the scoreboards at baseball games just so I could get a suicide cone. You know what I mean?
This is another side of Pete's life we've never heard of or explored. I used to work the signs at the baseball games.
That's right.
Get suicide slushies.
Amazing.
Yeah, you got to have some kid out there working the scoreboard. You know what I mean?
Today, I'm up at my mom's, and she was like, yesterday when we were coming up here, she was like, hey, I found two boxes of comics. Should I just throw them away? I was like, what are you crazy? No, I never do that. And so I have them right here next to me. Just gonna pull randomly from some of these things. These are
What is that? X-Men 20?
These are good issues. Yeah, we got X-Men.
That's a rebooted run. 90s X-Men 20. It's not like uncanny X-Men 20. Okay.
No, I've got all of X-Men 2099 from the Jump, which I'm definitely gonna get into and read. Another weird series. I don't know. This is like my full XW box that I just haven't had a handle on.
But I would like to try to come back a little bit as far as the Philly is concerned. The soft pretzel scene is something that's blown my mind. You get soft pretzels everywhere. And the shadier the place, the better the soft pretzel is. And
should I be talking about a third thing? Would that help if we have three different conversations
going, going at once?
A soft pretzel scene?
Yeah.
What is that? What is that about?
Oh, I have that one.
Holographic card.
I have that one.
Love it.
Spider-Man 26, part of the 30th anniversary holograph card.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Anyway,
I
we don't have to do this visual, the visual show the and tell on the podcast. But we got Stormwatch 1 right here. This is was a waste of money, though, right? I'm going to be digging through these.
All right, before we go too long on this, I think that is it for your audience questions. Woo-hoo-hoo. And folks... I didn't run this by you beforehand, but in lieu of trivia, Pete, how do you feel about a little donation-y poo instead this week? Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me. I did do trivia, though. I just want to put that out there.
Oh, okay. Should Justin and I do trivia for abortion care? What do you think about
that? Sure. I mean, unless you just, for time-wise, if you were talking about, you know, moving on.
No, man, I got all the time in the world. Okay. Let's hit this. Here we go. For some trivia. And this is going to be for the National Network of Abortion Funds. There's a link. I'm going to read it out loud, but I'll try to tweet it out through at Comic Book Live on Twitter later. secure.actblue.com/donate/support-abortion-funds. And what this link does is it splits your donation among 92 local abortion clinics that need your help right now. But the great thing about it is not only are they doing the abortions locally and the healthcare, but they're also providing funding, travel, and lodging and other wraparound supports for those who need it. So that is very well needed right now. And yes, we're gonna play a little trivia. I think we're gonna do this for some money to support these abortion funds. So take it away, Pete.
All right, great. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Philip Baker Hall. Rest in peace. Please listen to all three options before you make your selection. Here we go, gents. Question number one. Guess who is coming to the Spider-Verse? Is it A, your mom, B, Spider-Rex, or is it C, Joan Cusack?
Wow. Right.
So it's either B, because that's the only one that's a real option.
C, real viable. C, viable option.
Yeah, I don't know. My mom did tell me she was thinking about taking a trip recently.
But to
my mom was out at a bar with Danny Spiders. So I feel like my mom is
pretty good. I'm gonna call your mom. Make sure she's okay.
Your mom, not my mom.
Justin, you should reach out to your mom. I don't know.
You got Danny Spiders hanging around?
If your mom's having Danny Spiders.
I'm gonna say B. B?
Yep.
Let's go with B. Right. Good call.
All right, here we go. Question number two. Image's new book, Flawed, is said to be Image's nail biter meets blank. Is it A, Chew Bill, B, Kill Bill, or C, Watch Bill Make a Sandwich and Talk It Out? So it's either A, which doesn't make sense, or you could say B.
Man, your references are throwing me for a loop this evening, Pete.
Yep.
I love them. I love trivia's evolving, Alex, and you need to get on board because Pete could say literally anything. We turned this over to him years ago. We never knew what shape it was going to take.
That's right.
I'm going to say B again. What do you think, Justin?
I think we should go with B. Strong B energy.
There we go. Nice. All right, here we go. Last one. Out in July, Batman the White Knight presents. What new take on a Batman villain will it be? Is it going to be A, Red Hood, B, Penguin, or C, Jeremy Piven? So it's either A, so we can give money to charity, or you could be completely wrong.
Hmm.
Wow, Jeremy Piven does strike me
as he's pretty bad.
A potential Batman villain.
Yeah. He's full of mercury, right? Which is, like, kind of scary.
I don't know. Is there mercury in cocaine?
That's a dusty reference to the time that he got mercury poisoning from eating too much sushi, which happened, I don't know, 15 years ago.
Wow, why are you all up in Jeremy Piven's business, man?
He had to and leave some Broadway play.
He ate too much sushi that was rolled in cocaine, so let's go with A.
Yeah, let's say A.
Yeah, Red Hood. Check all it out. Right.
There we go. And was there a secret reference?
Look at just real quick. Look at Kevin's comment in the, and we'll read it aloud for everybody listening. He says, "I know it, but I'm not going to say anything."
Ooh. Oh, I know what it is. It's Vanilla Sky.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. All right. As we all know, new comics are cool and they're coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to? Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to Action Comics number 1044, as well as Ghost Cage number 3, and then Hellboy and BPRD Old Man Whitey number 1, which isn't the real title.
Old Man Whitey.
It's Old Man Whittier, I believe.
Whittier.
Old Whitier. A lot more sense.
Oh, I'm looking forward to X-Man number 1 from, like, I want to say the late 90s, which was a great title. But I'm also looking forward to Iron Cat number 1, continuing Jed McKay's Black Cat saga, which I'm a huge fan of and always satisfies.
I'm looking forward to The Variants, number one from Marvel. This is by Gail Simone and Phil Noto, and it's a new Jessica Jones book, so that should be a lot of fun. All of those books, except for X-Men number one, are going to be on our Stack podcast. Comes out Wednesday at 9 a.m.
You sure it's not going to be in there? It could be in there. Might be.
You got to tune in. You have to tune in and have five of your friends tune in and then rate it 5 stars to see what happens. But that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Kevin Scott for coming on. Don't forget to check out The Ward from Dark Horse Comics. Also, Kyler Merrill. Check out Fletcher Cross on Kickstarter now. Next week, we have a packed show. Joshua Kemble is going to be here to talk about Jacob's Apartment. Chris Lawson and Aubrey Lynn Jepson, students of Scott Snyder's class, are going to be here to talk about the anthology that they put together with other students from Scott Snyder's class. Also, Carol Howell, the director of the Foundling Museum, which has a comic book exhibit happening in the UK, is going to hop on. Probably will come on first because of the time difference, but we'll see what happens.
Smart.
Bunch of other podcasts you should check out. Let's Hear It for the Boys, our boys podcast every Friday. The Umbrella Podcademy, our Umbrella Academy podcast, a couple of episodes out. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale. I mean,
come on, dude.
Come on. I don't know when it's coming out. Riverdale After Dark, a Riverdale podcast coming out Mondays after that show. Ours, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast recapping Miss Marvel on Wednesdays. The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast every Thursday, or you can get every episode right now for Patreon subscribers. Speaking of which, patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Pez the Censors out.
Later.